The following was recorded in front of a live studio audience at the Studio 21 Podcast Cafe. This is the United Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Quirky Dog Podcast, inspired by some of the quirkiest dogs you can ever imagine and the owners who love them. This podcast is brought to you by the quirky couple themselves, Scott and Jess Williams. Their aim is to educate and entertain. Here's Scott and Jess.
Welcome, guys, and happy Wednesday. We're coming to you from Salem, New Hampshire, and we are going to talk about what to do if you own or you think you own an untrainable dog. But first, we're going to start with the quirky tip of the day. Oh, the pig is sounding strong. I feel like I say that every week.
Who is handling our tip of the day here?
Our quirky tip of the day is brought to you by Viagen Pets. Viagen is a cloning company out of Texas. And before we get to the quirky tip of the day, I want to give you some information on Viagen. Viagen, last week I talked about what to do if you're going to obtain a tissue sample from your animal while they're well and alive and everything else. Today I want to touch on what if your animal just recently deceased, what the protocol is for obtaining a tissue sample for them. Best case scenario, guys, is the sooner to the passing, the better, okay? Anything from 4 to 5 days old could still be preserved, and maybe the tissue could still be good enough for cloning, but your best bet is going to be straight after that animal has unfortunately passed away. And ideally, we want the vet to be taking this sample, but if you happen to be at home, Viagen walks you through that process on their website of how you can obtain a sample. So as close to when the animal was deceased as possible, and make sure that everything is refrigerated, not frozen. You do not want to freeze an animal and then be getting tissue from that to be a viable cloning situation. So that's
my quirky
tip of the day.
I would have made that mistake had I not heard that.
It's an important thing to say, and this is when a lot of people consider cloning, when you're going through that really tumultuous, hard time, and it's so emotional and everything else. You think, I'm just going to send the sample and, you know, spend that smaller amount of money because I maybe want this animal in my life again. All right, so my quirky tip of the day is that I want you guys to check out Let's Talk with Animals, the podcast. Last week, we had Shannon Cutts on. This week, we are on Shannon's podcast. We did a little podcast swap, super fun. She has a podcast come out every other Wednesday. Ours was released that we filmed with her just today. So check it out. Her show notes descriptions has her podcast link, but it's Let's Talk to Animals. So check out that episode. Scott and I make a guest appearance. And while we're asked to be on a lot of podcasts, we don't often agree. So this was a fun one that, you know, we did from home, and we just talked about a few different things and we touched on in our podcast with her, which was a great episode, by the way, if you haven't seen it. So check it out.
Kind of like being on another planet with Shannon.
Is great. I love her. We need more people like Shannon out there. Okay, so let's talk about an untrainable dog. This was a Scott topic. He texted me the other day. He said, let's do a podcast on untrainable dogs. And where did you come up with this? Why? Where's your head at?
Well, all these topics I come up with from talking with clients out in the field. And it happens fairly often where I will go to someone's home and they will say to me, I didn't think my dog was trainable. Either one of the husband or spouse or, so, you know, one person calls me, but quite often it's the other person or even the person that called. They've already had a couple of trainers. They've been in classes. They've done a lot of stuff and have had either very low success or they've been told by other trainers that their dog is not trainable for any number
and
of reasons.
Other trainers, other professionals, XYZ, we hear it all the time. I'm sorry, if you are in the dog profession, whether you are, you know, practicing veterinary medicine or you are out there trying to train people or help people or you are a behaviorist and, you know, you're doing a lot of behavior modification and maybe prescribing pharmaceuticals, the words, your dog is untrainable, should not be leaving your mouth. That is not something that we should be perpetuating in the animal industry. And we're here 4 minutes into the podcast. We're going to flat out say, we don't believe that dogs are untrainable. Any dog out there, we do not believe that. I'm not talking about wolf hybrids. I'm not talking about coyote hybrids. I'm not talking about freaking half foxes out there. Domesticated dogs, we believe all of them are trainable. Now, the level and the degree to which we can get every dog, we will dissect that a little bit throughout this podcast, is rather different. It's not that we're guaranteeing that every dog is going to be have an off-leash recall within 2 weeks. We don't feel that way. Some dogs take a lot more time. But in our professional opinion and all of our years of experience, we have not come across a dog that is just simply untrainable.
No, I think when I was very new, you know, a couple of years into being a dog trainer, I had one dog in particular that was acted very feral, very afraid of people. And the most basic things, I had a very difficult time accomplishing, even sit on command with hand gestures, you know, the whole thing. It was like I wouldn't bet money the dog would sit after working with this dog for 2 weeks. And I was frustrated. I felt like the dog isn't trainable because my ego was involved and the dog wasn't getting trained in my time frame. I thought the dog should be here in 2 weeks. I've done 1,000 reps. The dog isn't getting it. And that, I think, is on me. Now, if I saw that same dog again, I would say this dog needs a lot more time than 2 weeks to accomplish what we want to accomplish with this dog. We need to be patient and keep working. Because in the end, if you're committed to the dog, you have only really one option, and that is to keep working. You don't just abandon all hope and live with a dog for 10 years that is completely off the hook and damaging your property and jumping all over your guests. That's not acceptable. And if you're not going to rehome the dog or put the dog down, then it's your responsibility to the dog to keep training and keep trying to make some progress.
Yeah, and trainability is showing an improvement in behavior in some way, shape, or form, right? So this feral dog that Scott talks about out in California, that doesn't mean the dog was now dragging him down the street in addition to not sitting. And, you know, we mention ego quite a bit on this podcast, and this comes up within our own business together as well. Even to this day, there are dogs that we have had for a month board and train that we ditched the sit on. You can judge us. You can say we don't know how to train, that's our fault. Of course, any dog can sit. There have been dogs where it's a struggle. It's going to be a power struggle. It's going to be a fight. So the dog still walks on a loose leash, but the dog, when we stop, just stops next to us. They don't sit. We don't beat that home to the point where we're like, this dog has to sit because I want the dog to sit. There are dogs that we have not taught to stay on a bed. Not a lot. Scott and I have been together now going on 13 years. Sink's going to be 13 years old tomorrow. I can't believe that. So that's a long time of training as professionals, being together as individuals. We have not taught maybe 5 to 6 dogs the bed command. And this is with working with thousands of dogs. Like, that is no joke. There has been thousands of dogs that we have come across. But certain board and trains, we go to do the bed command with them. They're incredibly anxious. It's inhumane for them to be on the bed. As soon as we leave, we could stand there and hold the leash all day and they would stay on the bed, not because they feared us, just because we were near them and it made them feel emotionally safe. But the whole point of the bed exercise is the dog can be on the bed while you eat dinner. The dog can be on the bed while you're watching a TV show. You're not standing there managing the dog. And we personally have found that unethical. Those dogs were able to be tethered. Maybe they were a little bit stressed and then they chose to lay down. But the parameters of the bed were too strict for those dogs. We've ditched the bed command. There are certain dogs that to have them off leash, we're talking about maybe 6 months of legitimate hardcore control. They just have this more tendency to flee than other dogs. So that's why, you know, we talk about people who guarantee dog training on this podcast sometimes. And we find that to be one of the most unethical things in this industry, because to guarantee, you know, a bed command, a sit, a recall, and everything within 2 weeks time frame for every single dog, you just haven't been around long enough. You haven't seen enough of the industry. And that doesn't mean that these dogs that came in that maybe didn't learn a bed command didn't do other things brilliantly, but we're not going to let our egos override just basic humane treatment of animals because a specific dog is going to blow up when it is asked to sit.
Yeah, and that being said, we've had dogs go home that I have not been pleased with the results that I was able to get in the time frame I had them. It wasn't that they were untrained, but I wanted things to be tighter, and I, you know, there were weaknesses, you know, that needed work. And then we always do follow up classes with the clients after the dog goes home. And some of these dogs that come to mind, that I was just wish they would be, that they, I could have got more done with them. That next month that they were at home, they continued to improve dramatically. So that, you know, now they're home for a month, I'm doing the last follow-up class, and the dogs look great, absolutely great. I couldn't get it done in 2 weeks, but the 2 weeks plus the 4 follow-ups over another month at home, the people were really into making it happen.
Yeah.
And they got the dog over the hump, and everything was great.
And that's with owner compliance, too. And Scott will be the first one to say, he's said this for years and years and years and years and years, some dogs just need a little more time. It's like kids at school, you know?
I still need more time.
Oh, my God, more time than I have half the time. But literally, you know, some kids, they can, you know, learn arithmetic or whatever within, you know, that 1 month time frame that you're going to go through this module in the mathematics class. Some kids, it could take a year. Some kids, it has to be 3 years. Everybody's brain works differently, and that's the same with dogs. That does not mean because it takes more time that that dog is untrainable. All right, let's go to break super quick, and when we get back, we're going to talk a little more about this topic.
Want to keep up with all the latest from the Quirky Dog Podcast like me and Murphy here? Then make sure you head on over to the YouTube channel and subscribe. Or if you prefer to listen to the madness, go on over to iTunes or Spotify and follow the Quirky Dog Podcast. And hey, while you're there, leave a rating and review and let them know what you think of the show. Until then, keep it quirky.
Okay, we're back. So if you're out there and you have thought that maybe your dog is untrainable, you've had clients who have said, my dog is untrainable, or your sister-in-law, you know, has been told by professionals that the dog is untrainable. Normally what that means is that the dog is more stubborn than other dogs. Maybe the dog is super clever, and every time you go to train the dog just, you know, lays down flat on the floor and acts like it can't process any information and everything else. It can look various different ways. And just because you have tried to train the dog, that doesn't mean that the dog is untrainable. Maybe you haven't sought out the right professional help. Maybe you haven't tried certain management techniques. Maybe you haven't done enough mindfulness for yourself that's included your dog to have some level of success. But a trainable dog is a dog that goes from completely barking its head off all the time, crazy, can't shut it up, to a dog that barks less, a dog that drags you down the street and, you know, you can't control, super reactive, everything else, to a dog that can walk on a loose leash and isn't just blowing up at every leaf and every dog and every human that passes. There's ways to improve, right? I can go through situation after situation after situation of what untrainable may look like. But again, we are here to preach and to teach and to tell you that of all of our dogs that we have done and all of the professionals that we know, there isn't such a thing as an untrainable domesticated dog.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes, and I mentioned this to you earlier, I think sometimes people would like to think their dog is untrainable because they have been unable to train the dog. And so, and even some trainers will say that the dog has a medical problem, has a mental problem. It's like getting everybody off the hook for the dog's behavior. You know, you're absolved of this bad behavior because the dog has terrible anxiety. Therefore, can't be trained. All we can do is medicate. Or the sibling syndrome was one we had. I went to a guy's house. He had these two dogs. They grew up from puppyhood together. They bought the puppies together. And they had another trainer there that told them, first, they didn't tell me this. I took the dogs one at a time, started working them. And they could see that the dogs were working with me. And they said, okay, we want to do a board and train. We were told the dogs are untrainable because they have sibling syndrome.
Yeah, a trainer in Martha's Vineyard literally said this to these people. And they were Salukis. They're not the easiest breed to train. We had them for a month. It wasn't the easiest road for us. But those dogs made incredible, incredible, incredible progress. So if
they had off-leash control when they
were home. Yeah, if a professional is diagnosing them with some syndrome that allows them not to be capable of learning or, you know, as an owner, you're saying, oh, well, this dog's different than everything else. They're untrainable. That just isn't the case. And I do want to bring light to the fact that aggression and this podcast are two very separate topics. We don't have to go down the aggression rabbit hole too frequently. But just because a dog, we say all dogs are trainable, that doesn't mean that certain dogs aren't so aggressive that we're not still going to be, you know, suggesting behavioral euthanasia, or we're not going to be training them ourselves. Okay. We never promise, oh, we'll train the aggression out of the dog. But if Scott can't even touch a dog on an in-home, or if a dog is on a leash that he's holding muzzled, just repeatedly coming after him, muzzle punching him, he's not now going to say, oh, it's okay. Every single dog is trainable. We can help you through this. There's a certain, you know, risk factor there. So I want to just touch on that if you're listening and thinking that.
And I still think that dog, I've been bitten by dogs pretty good on in-home first sessions. And those dogs are trainable too, for sure. But like Jess said, the risk-reward, someone's going to get nailed by this dog. Maybe two or three people are going to get nailed. And this is quite often what happens, not to go down that rabbit hole too much. But quite often the first one, two, or three bites goes unreported because it's a family member, it's a friend, it's a contractor that you're paying, and they want to get paid. They don't want to have conflict with you. So they say, oh, it's no big deal. And they actually had a puncture wound and they got bit pretty good, you know?
Yeah. And I would say this is maybe 1% of dogs that we see. You know, if Scott sees 100 dogs a year or plus, he's, you know, saying this maybe to 1 to 3 people a year, depending on what our numbers look like that year and what luck we may be coming across with our career that year. But I just want to bring up that point. Just because we're talking that every dog is trainable, that doesn't mean that a dog is past its point of aggression that, oh, that dog is going to be saved and be fine too. We thoroughly believe in ethical behavioral euthanasia. We just might not believe in it as frequently as some other professionals in the industry.
Yeah,
just as a little aside.
And the relationship and the history that the owner has with the particular dog plays a big part in me wanting to work with the people and the dog. If they have a really aggressive dog that they've had for 2 weeks from a rescue somewhere, I'm telling them, get this dog out of your house. Yeah. Someone's going to get hurt. If they've had the dog for 3 or 4 years and the dog has got some triggers that are pretty serious triggers, I want to help them work with the triggers. They're not going to get rid of the dog. They've had the dog for, it's part of the family. The dog is just very difficult in certain situations. Certainly, I'm going to work with them.
Yeah.
You know?
So just food for thought as a little aside.
Yeah.
All right. So if you are a professional in this industry, you have likely heard this phrase before. You know, my dog is untrainable. My last dog was untrainable. XYZ. And really, it goes to the root of, what does that mean? The dog acts more feral. Okay. Well, if the dog acts more feral, the dog isn't just going to be off leash. Like, the dog maybe isn't going to eat food. That's a really common one. You go to a food class, they start trying to do behaviors, and all of a sudden the dog doesn't want to eat, too stressed to eat, doesn't have high enough food drive, XYZ, whatever you want to call it, I don't care. Just because the dog doesn't eat doesn't mean it's not trainable. You now need to come up with a methodology where you can communicate with that dog. And that does not mean now that you are just going to be so hard on this dog and, you know, beat its ass and everything else to get it to work. That's not what we're talking about. But you can certainly mold the dog into a sit, praise the dog, communicate with the dog differently rather than say, oh, no food, no training, can't do it. And even sometimes we're going to the extent of giving appetite stimulants to these specific dogs so they will eat at class, which it makes no sense to me. It's mind-boggling. A lot of dogs don't eat when they're stressed. A lot of humans don't eat when they're stressed. I'm sorry. Have you ever been, you know, waiting at the hospital for a loved one and, you know, you're waiting on some news from a doctor, whether they're in a surgery or they were in an accident or anything else? Most people aren't running to the cafeteria to be, you know, eating their full lunch at that point. Stress sometimes causes a lack of appetite, and that's okay. But us as professionals need to be able to work around that angle to still work with the dog and the owner, because a dog that's not going to eat cookies during any 4 or 6 or 8 classes doesn't mean that that dog can't be trained. It just means that we have to get a little more creative about how we're going to communicate and get the job done.
Yeah. And so, you know, all dogs, but I've seen this with some dogs, they're so intelligent that they've learned how to develop a behavioral problem that stops a training session. I mean, it's just so crazy. You can see, like, for example, fairly recently, I had a dog that, a golden retriever, beautiful dog, that had trouble walking on the leash. I took the dog, got the dog walking on the leash. The wife took the dog, had the dog walking on the leash. When the husband took the dog would stop and start scratching its neck, like the collar was just so bad, you know, so distracting, the dog couldn't walk. And the guy would stop and wait. And sometimes he would start scratching the dog's neck too, saying, it's okay, buddy, and like trying to get him going. He couldn't walk the dog 20 feet. The dog would stop and just trying to scratch its neck. It was a behavior the dog learned to stop this person from controlling them on the leash. And there's so many little things like that that pop up. Some dogs will pee. Mm-hmm. You put a leash on the dog, you try it. Now, if it's pulling you, it's no problem. You make the dog go, no, we're going this way. The dog all of a sudden will start peeing. Like, it's so traumatized, and everyone's like, oh my god, you know, stop, you know what I mean?
No,
it's just a learned behavioral
farting. We've seen this before. Dogs that, you know, start to go on a training session, all of a sudden now they have a lot of gas and now they have to poop instead of train. Like, we've seen it all. I mentioned a dog laying down protesting for walking earlier in this podcast, and that's a common one. But Scott's right. They are so intelligent that they come up with these little behaviors and ways to get out of things.
Once they learn that works, okay, they just register that away. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to start doing this And we're not going to be doing this crap today.
Yeah, no.
I'd rather be on the couch. You can rub my belly.
Some dogs start uncontrollably shaking just to do it. And then all of a sudden, they're like, all right, we're still going to walk. And 30 seconds later, you don't see any more shaking. Various things will pop up, okay? But it's important to know what these triggers are and to know how to work through them, because dogs deserve training and you guys deserve a better quality of life. I guess that's just as important as the dog deserving the structure and, you know, some semblance of control to feel sane in its own mind and body. But everybody deserves better. So if you're thinking while you're listening to this, wow, I thought my dog was untrainable, maybe they're not, I'm going to seek out some more professional help, do that. Go for it. If you have been told by a professional that your dog is untrainable, and I'll even throw groomers into that. Groomers, other trainers, behaviorists, vets, any animal professional that is going to tell you your dog is untrainable, you need to look for other professionals. They don't know what they are talking about. And I'm not trying to be rude to people, and I'm not trying to be sitting here and looking down upon anyone else. But at this point now, statistically, we can confidently say that all dogs are trainable. That does not mean they all get to the same level at the same time. That does not mean that there's a guarantee of all of them doing the same behaviors. But I have never seen you walk a dog that has not that has been pulling you the entire time in 13 years. I've never seen Scott not be able to at least get loose leash walking out of any dog we've worked with. And I'm not saying perfect healing, perfect position, everything else, but loose leash walking. And in addition, not just reacting to everything that goes by. And those are some common issues that people have that they can't get over the hump with. So we just wanted to touch on that.
I just had a dog today. I was just at a house today with a beautiful boxer. Young boxer, like 14 months old, that you start putting some control on this. Now, the dog, you can walk the dog down the street and, you know, try to keep him from pulling, just kind of keep tension, and you can go up and down the street, and you could go 2 or 3 miles like that. The dog was running the show. As soon as I put some control on the dog starts jumping on me, grabbing the leash with his teeth, and like all kinds of behaviors to let me know, we're not doing that today.
Yeah.
And this is what he's been doing with the owner. And the dog was, she couldn't train the dog because he was too powerful. And he would start really just overpowering her.
Yeah.
And she had been to quite a few classes and done a lot. And she was really concerned because she had had several boxes before this and never had this kind of behavior out of another one. And I was able to make good headway with the dog. But it was tough because he had this learned behavior was pretty strong. Like, hey, you're not going to be doing this to me. And I could see why she was frustrated.
Yeah.
And why anybody would be frustrated,
yeah,
with that.
Yeah, and we understand your pain, but we're here to give you guys hope. We want to tell you that if you're concerned and if things are not going in the right direction, the sooner you have intervention, the better. And if you have not found the right professional to intervene, keep looking, okay? I promise you guys, no matter where you are in this country or in this world, there is somebody out there that can help you. Okay, thank you so, so much for joining us here today. Once again, I want you guys to check out Let's Talk to Animals, the podcast from today. Scott and I make a guest appearance. Next week, we are going to talk about aggression in dog sports. Hot topic in 2023, 2024, and we are going to touch on it here today.
And we're not talking about protection sports.
All right, we will. We'll see you guys next week and have a great week. In the meantime, keep it quirky.
The views and opinions expressed by the hosts, guests, or callers of this program do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Studio 21, Podcast Cafe, the United Podcast Network, its partners or affiliates.